I think creators need to still think about one of the most important questions, which is who's it for? So what I'm seeing is it depends on where you're creating content. The underproduced, natural looking UGC stuff, it still works on Instagram and TikTok and wherever because it seems authentic. And now we're getting, as a production company, asked to underproduce things so that it doesn't have too much shine on it. So that is,
you know what? That's amazing. They're actually asking you to play it down.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Well, and we're suggesting it too, to say, hey, if this has got a little less production value, it'll seem more authentic. Before we get into this episode, I want to say thank you for being part of the show. Wow, we are off to an amazing start, and Bill and I have heard from so many of you that you're loving what we're cooking. Bill and I have both spent our careers running multiple businesses, including the advertising, marketing, and branding side of agency life, and video production for TV, web, and social media. We're excited to share our expertise with you here and help you grow your business and brand, maybe even a billion-dollar brand. On that note, there's been a flood of requests for us to do more deep dives and diagnosis on branding, campaigns, copywriting, web design, or video production projects that you're working on. So I'm happy to announce what we're calling for now, the deep dive. This is a working title, and we'd love your help naming it. We did a deep dive in the last episode on the high-end $2,500 Anthros chair, and it was a huge hit. It was a breakdown of what they got right and what is also probably killing their chances of success. But we also offered ideas about how they could fix it and potentially build their brand into a powerhouse. There's a link in the description of the podcast that you can submit your draft or finished work for Bill and I to evaluate your work on the air. Check it out. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Billion Dollar Brand Podcast. I am your co-host, Brian, along with my incredibly handsome other co-host, Bill.
That's it. I'm leaving on a high note.
Let's get right into it.
Let's do. All right. So I have a question for you, given the nature of the business that you're doing, based on an article that I read that talked about how the agency model is broken. And what the author was really talking about was, you know, agencies tend to come in and they do the same process over and over again. And this has been going on forever. We're going to have to charge you a bajillion dollars to learn your business. And we can't do anything until we've learned your business. And that got me thinking about all the rest of the steps that follow after that. And, you know, how the timeline for everything has gotten so much shorter because production for so many things that businesses do has gotten shorter and in their own control. Right now, everybody has a traveling studio in their pocket or their purse or what have you. And that got me thinking, as it relates to the production, which is, you know, Brian's side of the house, that's what he does and that's what his company is all about. How has expectation and the influence of user-generated content and the rest changed the way that you work with clients and what they expect from you with respect to production quality? How's that affecting your business?
The short answer is it's affecting it in a very positive way, but it also cuts both ways, right? So I love this question because things are happening so quickly. It is a moving target, but I think it's a huge opportunity for production folks. So the one thing that's happening or has been happening since probably 2008 is the barriers to entry have just been coming down, down, down.
Yeah.
And it's all due to the invention of the iPhone, the incredible technology, and you know, everything that's packed into that little supercomputer in your pocket. It's due to DSLR camera technology and the price come down. So, you know, back in the day before that era, right around the time YouTube launched in 2005, that stuff didn't really exist. It was camcorders. I mean, I would remember, you know, we were skateboarding, holding these, you know, like camcorders and following each other around on skateboards with little, you know, Sony cams or whatnot, JVC cams. And that evolved into the DSLR revolution. But, you know, because the barriers of entry have come down, it means that the power is shifting back into the hands of the creators, which is an amazing thing. It's wonderful. Up to that point, there were a lot of gatekeepers. You know, you had to belong to a Hollywood studio, or, you know, you had to have some sort of relationship with a big production house. That's changed everything in a good way and really helped spark this burgeoning creator economy. The way it cuts the other way is that you don't have to spend the kind of money that you used to have to spend with lights, camera, action, and team and crew. And so there's more competition. I guess it's probably the same way I look at content itself. So there's more content than there's ever been in the history of the world. At the same time, this is still the best time to create stuff because, you know, it's a meritocracy. The audience will elect the winner. And it's the same way in production too. So you can get in there and for sharper budgets, tighter budgets, create amazing looking creations and art and all kinds of storytelling. But at the same time, sometimes budgets are not where they need to be. So you need to be more creative, more resourceful, more nimble. And I mean, I can go on and on.
No, I think I just find it really fascinating that, you know, the face of this thing has changed so much. And I'll tell you, it's as I watch it, there's an interesting evolution that's coming along, right? Where in the beginning, it was, if it's not UGC, if it's not user-generated content, for those that aren't nerding out on the three-letter thing today, if it isn't that, if it doesn't feel honest and authentic and a little shaky hand cam and like, you know, I'm in my kitchen under bad lighting and like I'm just telling it like it is, then it stops being authentic. But what's really interesting is as you watch Mr. Beast come along, as you watch influencers get more sophisticated, savvy, all of a sudden the lighting gets nicer. And then after that, the mics get nicer. And then all of a sudden the editing gets nicer. And I'm questioning and I guess predicting a little bit that these are all just going to transition. I mean, I think Gary Vaynerchuk said it a number of years ago. I remember seeing him present like 15, 18 years ago in Baltimore. And he stood up and he was like, this is NBC, CBS, and ABC. Like, if you didn't realize that, like, what you're holding in your hand is going to become these new channels. And as I'm watching that happen, I'm also watching the maturation of the producers and those content while they're doing it themselves or with small teams. And while they're not doing it with Premiere, they're not doing it with CapCut. You know, it's the same, like, it's the same thing. It's just, it's the evolution and maturity of the production quality as a means of distinguishing yourself as a more sophisticated, more influential, more established entity, even on these channels that, you know, we think of now as social media channels. What do you think about that?
I think it's amazing. And everyone's talking about AI in our space. And I'm excited for AI because it's just going to be more tools in the tool belt to help with workflow and be able to do things either that we haven't been able to do, like, for example, you know, like in Adobe Photoshop and the beta right now, you can ask AI to create something for you that's not there. You know, type in the word couch or sofa, right? And then all of a sudden, Photoshop through AI will create that for you and you can choose the different iterations. Video is coming. Video is here. They're about to launch it. And so you could do that same thing with video. Give me a, you know, Tokyo at dusk in 1984, you know, with, you know, skateboarders riding down the street. That's exciting. I'm excited for that. But back to your kind of original question, I think creators need to still think about one of the most important questions, which is who's it for? So what I'm seeing is it depends on where you're creating content. The underproduced, natural looking UGC stuff, it still works on Instagram and TikTok and wherever because it seems authentic. And now we're getting, as a production company, asked to underproduce things so that it doesn't have too much shine on it. So that is,
you know what? That's amazing. They're actually asking you to play it down.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Well, and we're suggesting it too, to say, hey, if this has got a little less production value, it'll seem more authentic. The other thing I've been seeing too, kind of this trend on website development, is I'm now seeing like TikTok videos in the like scroll through of the home page. So above the fold, they've got the product, and instead of product shots, it's TikTok videos that are playing in real time on a loop. And you can, they're sort of on a carousel, and you can scroll through them, and it's like, oh, interesting. The integration of that particular social media, or if that's where the customer is or is accustomed to seeing, they are adapting to the customer and putting on their website now what they're used to seeing on social.
I think that takes us back to, you know, everything old is new again, right? Like, I remember a client about a year ago kind of teasing me when I referred to something as a spot or saying that it was TV. And they said, no, this is OTT or this is streaming or this is whatever. And I was like, hey, man, it's still television, right? Like, it's a 15-second, it's a 30-second, it's still television. You're talking about where it's viewed and how it's viewed, but it's the same thing. You know, a movie doesn't stop being a movie because you happen to be watching it in a parking lot waiting for your kid at gymnastics on an iPhone. It's still a movie. So I think, you know, the language, of course, keeps getting changed up every 5 minutes, and that makes it seem like there's more, I think, going on than there really is. But I think it's interesting. It's always been about production quality. It's always been about the fundamentals, right? Light, sound, you know, content in terms of are you conveying an idea? Are you just wandering and babbling around? Are you actually like getting somewhere? I mean, these are the things that ultimately define whether something was worthwhile or not. I'm curious. I'm seeing it as the influencers are raising the bar. You're seeing it as, you know, sophisticated brands are actually trying to lower it to meet in the middle. I think it's really interesting to watch, where's it going to end? Where's equilibrium going to happen? I'm super curious to see where that goes. Watch it be that they chase each other's tail. Watch it be that the influencers overproduce to become, you know, what we think of today as being full production. And then, you know, the brands sort of like back off to feel more like they are, you know, in touch with their audience base. I think it's going to be interesting to watch.
Well, let's stay on that for a second. So, you know, in the news, a timely thing is, do you know who Marques Brownlee is?
No.
Mm-mm. So Marques, or MKBHD, is the tech reviewer of all tech reviewers. So he's this kid who started when he was like 9 years old. I think he's like only 25 or 27 now, but like he's been on YouTube since he was 9 doing tech reviews. So nice. Like he's got all this street cred, he's got all this experience, and he has 10 plus million followers on several different YouTube channels. He has one about cars. He has one about tech, but he's sort of the go-to tech guy. So if you want to know what to buy in tech. So he reviewed this new, do you know what the Humane Air Pen is?
No. You have like the most incredible encyclopedic knowledge of these things. Humane Air Pen?
All right. Can you see this here?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's this new kind of like, you know, little pin, and it's like got AI and you tell it what to do and it does stuff for you. It's kind of like your personal assistant. And so Marques was, the brand sent Marques this to review. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure they expected a really great review because they were really excited about their product. But it turned out he absolutely hated it. And so
the worst product I've ever reviewed.
Yeah. Now imagine something. Wow. Oh, so he has 18 million subscribers on this channel. Imagine someone with 18 million subscribers saying this is like the worst ever. Now this is not designed by like nobody's. This was former Apple employees who started this company, and I think they had high hopes, and I've seen it around. So he just hates it. Mm-hmm. And everyone is all up in arms because he also did something with Fisker a while back. Do you know the Fisker brand?
Yeah,
automotive?
The car. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Shortly after, He did a poor review on that vehicle. The Fisker stock took a dive, a nosedive, and there was talks of bankruptcy and all that. And so here's this, you know, innocent reviewer who's got a lot of clout, and supposedly people are accusing him of basically killing a company just with one review. So a lot of people are in the Twitter comments saying, you know, shame on you, Marquez. How dare you? You know, you have so much influence. You got to be careful. And he responded very well. I mean, like, so poised. And he said, listen, guys, the only reason that I'm still doing this after all these years is because I tell the truth. And when a product is great, I say that it's great. And when it's not, I say that it's not. So it's like, what more do you want from me? Like, do bad reviews kill companies? No. Bad products kill companies. Yeah. And that's what happened here. And so you sort of asked, what's the future of brands and influencers? I think the power will continue to shift into the hands of influencers as long as they continue to tell the truth, be authentic and honest, that they're not bought, you know, like, you know, if we look at traditional news, we know that the news is bought. If you look at traditional medicine, we know that most of the doctors are bought by the pharmaceutical companies. You know, it's all a big racket. If you look at podcasters that are doing well, I think of Marquez, MKBHD. I think of like Lex Friedman, even Joe Rogan, who's, you know, controversial. But these guys, at least on the surface, they do not appear to be bought. They are doing their own thing the way they want to do it. And so they're capitalizing on it by capturing the most attention. And I just think that they're going to continue to have the most leverage.
It's really, if you think about it, and you know, fortunately, I'm old enough to have the gray hair required to remember life before the interwebs, but influence is not new. Jim Mattea's, you know, comments on automotive in the Chicago Tribune back in the day would cause changes. You know, Siskel and Ebert giving thumbs up or thumbs down to a movie would have significant impact on box office trail. Like, there's nothing new about this. That's right. Just that more people have access to it. Opinion is still strong. What I think is even more interesting, not to go all Ayn Rand about it, but I find it really interesting to see how everybody is behind an influencer until they become too big. And then all of a sudden it's the grill, right? You went from everybody's hero for telling the truth to the potential, you know, target for having been too truthful. And
I
find
that
super, right. Oh, yeah, yeah. I think that's super, super interesting, you know, and that's, I don't think people that seek internet fame always think about the dominoes that come later. They think about the dominoes right now. It's like, hey, I want the attention. I want the attention. I want the attention. But how many people have we seen sobbing on a TikTok video going, you know, okay, enough now. Like, I want the train to stop. But the train isn't going to stop because they've created all the momentum behind them on purpose. Like each one of those steps they took created a little more momentum. I fear that we're, you know, way off topic, but it just, I find it interesting as we think about, you know, you don't have to have massive production quality to have massive influence anymore. Anybody can do it because of the great equalizer in social media. But yeah, you got to think a lot about what it is that you're willing to do, right? You say something about Fisker, meaning it, and you know, people respond to it, and then somebody gets their knickers in a twist on it, and it's like, hey, I'm allowed my opinion, even in a public forum where I have a lot of people listening to the loudspeaker I happen to be, you know, trumpeting on.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that's happening right now. Do you know about the Andrew Huberman piece?
No, which one
did
is
you hear
this?
About that? So, share this one with you. So, do you know who Andrew is?
Mm-mm.
So Andrew,
you know, I'm going to start a Bill and Brian tick for how many times you ask me something that I have to say no, I don't know.
That's okay.
I'm chalking this up to you're on the West Coast, I'm on the East Coast.
So Andrew Huberman probably has the most popular podcast in the world, second only to Joe Rogan. So you know, okay, we're in the podcast world, so I know about these things. And he was, let me pull it up here for you.
Is he the psychologist?
He is a neuroscientist.
He's the neuroscientist.
Yeah,
I know his face. I didn't know him by name.
Yes, I'm going to show you this. So, New York Magazine does this piece on him. You call it a piece. Mm-hmm. It's a hit piece. Falling for Dr. Huberman. It is a complete hit piece. It's a disgrace in my mind. I'm a fan of Andrew, so I have a bias. And I actually, you know, kind of know him and some of his people personally. So I have that bias, but
yeah,
this is a total hit piece. This is sort of the cost of fame these days. So, you know, Andrew has built his podcast from zero to hero. It is a gigantic podcast, super influential. He's got Stanford school credentials, and he's a neurobiologist. Basically, his podcast is all about democratizing science and talking about a lot of alternative medicine, alternative therapies, and now crossing over to several different territories. But really, he's trying to bring education and science to the masses where otherwise there's high walls. And wildly popular among men and women. In fact, you know, there's a whole kind of subculture of Huberman husbands, people, and I'm probably one of them. It's like one of Andrew's favorite words is protocol. So it's like, what are your protocols? In other words, like, what's your morning routine? You know, he'll suggest you wake up at a certain amount of time, get daylight in your eyes first, and then you go for a morning walk, and you know, you do your breathing, and then you get in your cold plunge, and then you get in your sauna, and then you do your workout. You know, so he has all these like recommendations, supplements you want to take, you know, things to not to do, avoid alcohol, all these kinds of like very health conscious things. He's also become quite the ladies' man. He's single, eligible bachelor. And this hit piece from New York Magazine went and interviewed all of his ex-girlfriends. And if you can imagine where this went, like, it turns out...
I can only imagine.
It turns out he was playing the field with some of them. At least that's allegedly the story. And this whole piece kind of tries to drag him through the mud for being a bad boyfriend and, you know, crossing some moral barriers, and has nothing to do with his scientific research or how the quality of his work, but just tries to throw mud at him because he might have been a bad boyfriend to a couple of these women who feel, you know, jilted.
That they had a jilted experience.
Yeah. Well, so this
well,
is the cost.
There's nothing new under the sun about dragging people through the mud on subjects that have nothing to do with their contribution either. I'd love to say that was new, but yeah. People Magazine has made a fortune off of that for decades.
Yeah, and TMZ. And so I guess it's a commentary on, you know, like, I know that there's probably a lot of people listening to this who are also creators and maybe influencers or soon to be influencers. And so that's maybe some advice that we're imparting here, I think, is you've got to understand that these things come with the territory, and that also, you know, the internet is coming for your secrets. So if you've got skeletons in the closet, maybe you should be the first one to air that laundry and just get it out there.
You take Eminem's approach. I think you just say, here's everything in the world that anyone could ever say, so I've already been the one to say it. What else you got, right? It's like, there you go. I nothing can hide on the internet. That's the thing. You know, that one picture of that one time that you were at that one drunk party where you decided to put two crab, king crab legs out of your, you know, nose. That's now the mustache people will see you with for the rest of your natural life. So it's like, you got to really think about how much influence over you want to give to the audience. And I think that's a big thing, you know, and there are a lot of levels on that I think you can get caught up in, right? You can go from, hey, this was annoying, to, hey, that's scary, to, hey, that's really personal, you know, and you got to kind of gauge where you're going to build your wall around that.
Okay, I hope you're enjoying this episode as much as we are. We're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsor. This episode is also brought to you by my friends at Plunge. Some of you know that when I met Wim Hof, the Iceman, he was instrumental in helping me cure my chronic migraines with cold therapy. I first discovered cold plunging on my journey to better health about 3 years ago. I was getting pretty serious migraine headaches from a combination of poor sleep habits, inflammatory foods, work-related stress, and dehydration. I had no idea what was going on. I was miserable, couldn't function at work or home, and none of my doctors could figure out how to solve my problem without addictive pain meds. I started slowly with cold showers and immediately felt the benefits. I knew I needed to take it to the next level and started cold plunging. I focused on optimizing my sleep, fitness, nutrition, and it all started coming together. I have probably saved over $20,000 in medical bills staying healthy and fit on this protocol. How much would you invest to feel amazing? For me, the investment in a cold plunge to feel like me again was priceless. I've lost weight, I'm more mentally awake and don't need coffee or Red Bulls, and I'm doing my best to live a longer, healthier life to be with my family. That's what I want. My friends at Plunge just released the all-new, all-in unit, which is totally redesigned and full of upgrades. Use my code BRY, that's B-R-Y, to get a better price when you buy it. Just go to plunge.com and check out the all-new, all-in, as well as their beautiful hot sauna units available now for pre-order. It's been one of the best investments I've made in my health. I guarantee it. Yeah, so maybe this is a good transition to another set of influencers, Dude Perfect. You know Dude Perfect?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. So
finally, I feel good. Another one I know.
So they just got $100 million investment, basically. And I think this is also the future of influence, right? So I love the fact that these guys have been doing it forever. They're the five-man team that do all these crazy trick shots, if you don't know Dude Perfect. Yep. And so if you think about a brand like Dude Perfect going public, or, you know, getting outside investment to then build their brand, I think it's really, really smart. You know, before you'd have to be a company, and then, you know, you have this IPO and you get outside funding and you grow the company. But now individuals, or, you know, groups of influencers like this have the power to do this because they have all this influence. And it's through storytelling and through creating original content. I think it's awesome.
It is. You know, I'm curious to see, this is going to be the great equalizer of things. The question is, who's going to go and support the larger businesses that need to provide things in mass, right? I think there's so much attention right now on the individual contribution or the small team contribution like that. I'm really interested to see in the long run, who's going to be making refrigerators? Who's going to be building television sets? Like, where are those things going to go? Or do those things become ultimately automated? Then the question is, what is it that people are going to do? So, you know, when I was first coming into marketing advertising, I remember the guy that was down on the corner at Darcy when I started had been there. They were celebrating his 50th year with the company. And he had a picture on the wall when he was 20 nothing years old, the day he got the job and was brought in as a Darcy man, right? And that was a real thing. Like, you sought that out. You looked at the businesses and you considered what their culture was and you considered what they stood for. And you made a choice about, which of these fraternities were you going to pledge and why, right? And then you would get into them if you were lucky enough to get into them. And then you became a company person. And it was really interesting the way that this has changed over a single generation to be all about, I can make all the money that I need being on social media and making connections and trading my, you know, my insight or my influence or whatever. I'm really curious to watch how this plays out over the next 20, 30 years to see where do those dominoes fall?
Again, I'm excited that the power is back into the hands of those who've got influence. Again, as long as they are authentic and telling the truth and not trying to trick the audience will continue to support them. And you don't have to have millions and millions. You just have to have the right number. So like in the case of Be Perfect or even Mr. Beast, we're seeing Emma Chamberlain make her own line of coffee. I think it's amazing that that's the next evolution of these creators. They're not just entertainers. Now they're creating companies or they're creating products, building brands. We look at the Paul brothers and their tremendous efforts with Prime. It's a multi-billion-dollar drink brand now. It's going to be it's going to be Gatorade. Let's face it. And you know what they have more than any of these others? The main advantage? Direct distribution.
Yeah.
They just have to either tweet it out or share it on Instagram or make a TikTok, ring the dinner bell and say, that's ready, guys. Look at what just happened last night at 3 a.m. or, you know, midnight. Taylor Swift dropped a new album.
Yep.
And it wasn't in the trades. It wasn't on TV. She just posted on Instagram, let people know. And it's going to be another humongous success.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Ryan Reynolds has proved that fact again over and over too. And he's doing it a little differently, but the net result is the same, right? I bought this. It's my brand now. Just wanted to let you know in this fun, playful way. I think what's interesting there is how few brands are learning from what they're doing, right? I mean, there are the vast, vast, vast 99% of businesses continue to behave in a traditional way, even though all of this example is being set for them everywhere they look. You know, the influencers and the Ryan Reynolds of the world and the Taylor Swifts and the people that are below their level of influence but are, you know, still Dude Perfects and beneath them. And there's plenty of scale up and down. You know, this is a C-plus influencer. Now we're getting to a B-minus influencer, and then there's a B and whatever. And all of them are benefiting because they've figured out how to be interesting at the cocktail party, which is the internet. You know, social media is the great big cocktail party of the world. And they've figured out how to be entertaining at the cocktail party. And then you go to these brands and the brands are doing the same dumb stuff over and over again. You know, it's like if I see one more brand showing their product online 54 different ways, have they ever gotten up in the morning and said, oh my gosh, I wonder what the shoe company is doing today. I can't wait to go to the shoe company and look at a new set of pictures about their shoe. Like it just doesn't work like that. So I feel like there's so much to be learned by how these people are saying, look, no, talk to me like this. Show me something that's engaging like this. This is how I want to connect with you. I think if brands are open to doing that, they may finally be able to crack the code on the thing that I've soapboxed about for so long, which is brands don't have relationships with their people. Like it's not that way. Finally, through this one set of conduit, I think that they could actually crack the code on, I do actually have a relationship. It's finite, but I have a relationship with the brand because I'm able to actually engage with them in a way, as opposed to just buying them and then telling them that I like them, which is not real connection.
Yeah. So let's bring this full circle into some advice. I think that brands should consider doing a little bit of the same, which is like this endorsement of the influencer. So, you know, remember last week when we talked about Caitlin Clark? She was the first round draft pick in the WNBA. Did you hear her starting salary?
No, what was it?
So starting salary in the WNBA, first round draft pick, just take a guess.
Oh, see, I don't know if I should go low or high given how you're setting it up. On the one hand, I would say it's something paltry like $300,000, and on the other, I would say it's something substantial like $10 million. I don't know. What was it?
Take a risk, Bill. Stick your neck out. Throw a number out.
$3
million. Her starting salary is $77,000.
Shut up.
Nope. She got a four.
Why
she,
go?
She got a 4-year contract. Well, wait for it now. She got a 4-year contract deal. The total 4-year deal is worth $300,000. She gets about $77,000-$78,000 a year with options to get, you know, bonuses for wins and whatnot. So it's pathetic peanuts. But I just saw something. I don't think the deal is done, but I think she's about to sign a $20 million Nike shoe deal.
Well, that was what you were saying she ought to go and grab last time we were talking.
Yeah.
So that makes me happy that she's got somebody that's going to endorse her that way. That's great.
Yeah. And I hope the brands line up. But so back to my advice, I think, you know, this endorsement deal idea is super smart because you can buy credibility. You can buy your way in. You can buy attention through these athletes. Do you know Victor Wembin? Let's see, Wembin. What's his name? Victor Wembanyama. Yeah, Victor Wembanyama.
I can't even pronounce Victor Wembanyama.
He is a French player, I think, who just got drafted by the Spurs, San Antonio Spurs. Uh huh. He is the most incredible anomaly. Hold on, I have to show you his. You just have to look at him. He's this incredibly tall, thin. Where is he? Here he is. Dominant player. Here he is. Yeah. And he's dominating the NBA. If you can see him over here, he's. He's tall. He's blocking shots. He's taking 3-point shots. He's just dominant everywhere. Anyway, so, you know, the Spurs got him. He's changing the game of basketball. And, you know, now shoe brands or whoever has the opportunity to sort of get on the Wemby train. But this is a good model. It's just expensive. The other thing to do, I think, is to offer some of these influencers, especially when the price is low, is to give them skin in the game. Give them some equity in your company. Let them be part of it, right? If you can imagine if instead of Emma Chamberlain creating her own brand of coffee, if, you know, like a dying brand like Pete's Coffee or, you know, a coffee shop we don't know the name of yet, partnered with Emma and they built that brand together, you know, the Emma's tide raises all the boats in that water. So that's another way to go. Or else influencers will just continue to be independent. And then eventually no one will want to buy Starbucks anymore. If it's not convenient, they'll just buy Emma's coffee, or at least Emma will get some of that market share. And it'll continue to sort of splinter that market.
I think it's going to be very few brands that are able to actually make the conversion from initial interest into ongoing Starbuckness. I think that those that transition to becoming a machine that way, you know, there's a big difference in going from $100,000 brand to $1 million brand, and there's a big difference from going from $1 million to $10 million, and then from $10 to $100, and from $100 to $1 billion. Those are sizable steps that you have to really change your thinking about operations and what you're doing and how you're spending money and who you hire and how you align yourself. And I mean, I think That's again, getting back to the conversation we have earlier, I think a lot of these successful companies are going to find themselves becoming the thing they thought they hated, because their success is going to warrant that they have to grow in order to continue to move forward. And they're going to find that the path to growth is going to bring them either to some sort of glass ceiling where they just peter out because they are unwilling or unable to make that kind of jump. Or like Tom's shoes, someone's going to show up one day with a big, nice check, hand it to him and say, oh, by the way, you can't give away shoes anymore. Like, that's not profitable. So we're just going to cut that out of your DNA because it satisfies the investors. And it's like, wait a second, that was what I was. That's who I was. And it was like, yeah, well, not anymore because it doesn't work on paper. So we're going to make that change. Just wanted to let you know.
And by the way, speaking of Tom's shoes, did you see that piece on Blake Mycoskie, the Tom's founder?
No, I didn't. Where was it?
I can't remember where I saw it. I think maybe I saw it in one of the business magazines, but Blake was talking about this idea of burnout, that he's sort of lost his way, battled with depression and feeling lonely. And it's interesting, you know, some of these founders who started on this altruistic path are now sort of at a new crossroads. I was kind of sad. I thought, have you experienced any of this, or do you kind of, can you relate with this or seen people in other?
I think it's one of the biggest subjects that has yet to be addressed because there's so little sympathy for it. The truth of the matter is that when you start a business, you transition. You're not a part of the conversation anymore at the bar talking about how much the boss sucks. And I think people don't realize just how big a transition that is. I go back years ago, I was part of a leadership team. And this was just a funny thing. Baltimore's a small community. And one of the people that was at this thing was talking about this employee that they had, and she was just wringing her hands going, you know, I don't know what to do. I don't want to fire her, but I can't, like, I just can't get her to care. I can't get her to engage. I've tried all these different things, and I'm losing sleep over wanting to have it happen. And it just went on for like the entire 2-hour section that all of us were sort of jumping in and trying to help and, you know, the rest of it. And 2 days later, I was at a party for someone on the neighborhood block, and she started talking about this terrible boss she had, and she was going on and on and on about, you know, she's just meddling in my stuff and she doesn't understand, and like she wants me to like work harder all the time and this and that and the other. And as she was going on and describing it, it suddenly became apparent that I was hearing from the employee the other side of the equation. And when, you know, it's funny, the lines that you start to draw for yourself and that people draw around you as you step into a leadership role or you start a company or what have you, you know, and it's easy to toss off the line that says, oh, yeah, it's lonely at the top. But I'll tell you, honestly, having met so many different people that are a part of that, it is way more profound and everywhere than I think anybody gives it credit for. And of course, nobody wants to bring it up because they feel like somehow it will be, you know, a weakness or whatever. But I don't see how more business, like you have to find a way to give yourself space around that, or it will consume you. It's very easy to burn 19 or 20 hours a day on a business that you are passionate about and to lose sight of everything else. And because you don't have that connectivity with people, because in essence, you hold their job and their career in your hands, there are lines that people just won't cross. And there are, you know, it becomes very quiet very quickly. And I think people don't realize it's going to happen. And I think people aren't prepared for what it's going to do to them when it happens.
I had Blake on my other podcast, Behind the Brand. I know Blake personally. He's a terrific guy. I only wish him well. Hope he finds the purpose that he feels like he lost. At the same time, the idea guy in me sees business opportunity. You know, for all of these people who are probably feeling like I have and like Blake has, and maybe all of us have felt this at times. Yeah. We want connection. We want meaning. We want purpose. And so here's a signal, you know, loud and clear. It's coming like a siren. Like, we have been consuming social media since, you know, 2005. We've been hunkered down, you know, looking at our screens. It's a great time to think about a business that connects people in real life for relationships and helps combat all of these byproducts of being insulated in our houses or behind our screens or noses in our phones. I think it's a great opportunity.
You know, and it, I don't know that you even, yes, I would agree with that 100%. I don't know that you have to wait. I was surprised the other day. I received a message from a guy that I know, and it was one of those, like, our kids went to the same school and then they sort of hung out and then everybody went to a different school and it just sort of fell off the radar, right? That happens all the time. But to my complete surprise, after like 3.5 years, I get this text message from him one day, and he was like, "Hey man, you know, it's been a while. Like, do you want to go out and like grab a beer?" And I was like, "Yeah, why not? You know, let's go grab a burger and we'll grab a beer and we'll just sit down and like catch up and how the," and it was awesome. Like, it was truly, you know, there was no thought about the business in terms of the business, right? It wasn't inside speak. It was, "How are you doing? How are you doing? What's going on with the kids and family?" You know what I mean? And it was really nice, because I think your circle tends to get small when you're trying to achieve something. So just, you know, if you haven't reached out to somebody, like, flip the Rolodex one day. Nobody knows what a Rolodex is anymore. Turn on your phone and just scroll the contact list and like hit a button and reach out to somebody and just see what's going on in their world. I would agree with you. I think that's, you know, that's a fallen art at this moment. We feel like we're more connected, but we're not actually.
Yeah. Yeah. We can say a lot about that. I mean, I think experiences are still where it's at. That's why I love travel. That's why I love going out and meeting people. Although I'm an introvert, it's hard to do. Sometimes I have to force myself out. Are you thinking about more business ideas? I know you're always tinkering on something. You have anything in mind?
I have more ideas for business than I have life left.
Can I tell you about another product idea that I've got? Because I just love these ideas.
Yeah. Go for it.
Did I tell you about the bareback scrubber before?
No, tell me about the bareback scrubber.
I have been dreaming of this product idea since I was in college, actually. And I've never done it. Well, one, because I go on Google Patents once in a while and I see if something's been patented or something's come out. And nothing had come out up until like a couple years ago. But here, I had this idea for this bareback scrubber. So imagine... Well, so what's the problem? The problem is, and I don't know, I'm not super muscular, but it's hard to wash your back.
Yeah.
And the premise is, like, don't you want your back as clean as your front? Like, I can get the front proper clean, you know, in the shower. But the back, you know, you've got the stick with the loofah on it, or you've got like some sort of like, I don't know, rope thing where you're sort of like, you know, roping a sponge across your back. It's not perfect. It's terribly uncomfortable. And think about if you're an elderly person, like, you know, my grandparents or something, like, you become less and less limber and flexible. Think about super muscular people. I mean,
yeah, sure.
It's a problem. And so if you want your back clean, I invented this idea called the bareback scrubber. So bare as a play on words, but I would spell it B-E-A-R. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like a bear rubs on a tree. Have you ever seen the way a bear does
sure.
that? I wanted to basically have this really secure suction cup stuck to the wall of your shower. And then you could sort of slide in or slip in either like a proper sponge or a loofah or, you know, whatever accessory you wanted. You know, lather it up, put the soap, you put the water on it, and then wash your back like a bear does. And you're back.
You have to do that commercial. Like I would pay money to watch you do the dance you just did, showing people how to use your bareback scrubber. I think that that's brilliant.
And then, you know, it's kind of a play on words with the B-A-R-E or B-E-A-R.
Yeah.
I still think it's a great idea. Now they have these like electric toothbrushes that have these rolling bristles and brushes. I think you could pop one of those in. I think you could go a wholesale route and go like to all the gyms and, you know, all the different spas and so on. The fixture would be on the wall. You'd just bring your own accessory that clips in and clips out, you know. People would have to buy them, you know, they'd wear out after, you know, a couple of months. So there'd be this repeat business on the bareback. And then it would solve this great problem, which is you can never get your back as clean as your front. And off you go.
I think it's great, man. What are you waiting for? Like you've got Tuesday afternoon free. Go start the business.
What would you price this at? What would you pay for the bareback scrubber? First of all, would you buy this?
I'm thinking that the bareback scrubber is, you know, to get the setup, I think is probably like $125, $150, maybe even $200. And then the refills on it are something that's manageable. You know, maybe you're $35, $40 for a refill of the brush kit or something. I don't know. Oh. I mean, I think if it was manageable that way, then you'd be spending, you'd be looking at spending like $240 a year if you did it like every couple months where you changed it out, and it would be like, yeah, okay, I could do that.
Oh, I'm seeing it for much less. I was going to do like the Xbox model, which is, you know, make the console, the game console itself, pretty affordable. You know, if an Xbox is what, like $300 or something, $400, it's the X, you know, Microsoft makes the money in the game subscriptions.
Yeah.
So the bareback scrubber could give away the housing unit, you know, with the suction cup and the clip-on piece. I don't know, make that be $39 and then make your money on the different accessories that you'd want. Because maybe, you know, maybe for your child, you'd want not a rough loofah. You'd want more of a spongy.
Like a soft, yeah.
Kid-friendly, yeah, sponge. And then
Now you've got height considerations, right? So now you've got to think about something that adjusts. Or of course, every bathroom needs a bareback scrubber. So you know you got
already
get in
solved.
There.
Already solved. This is why the suction cup is so money, because it just suction cups from whatever height you want, and you can custom adjust it down to wherever you want to go. So you know if you're a tall person or less tall, or you know.
You're so money. You're so money, baby. And you don't even know it. You're so money.
I got a million of these ideas. I'm an idea guy. I love this product.
It is. It's good stuff. I think that's an awesome wrap for our session today.
Is that the pod? Okay.
That's the pod. We got to stop at the bareback scrubber. I don't think we can reach any higher today than we just did.
Direct to consumer. As seen on TV, whatever you want to call it. In stores now.
Yeah. Buy yours today.